So this is an announcement, which in a strange way, we're recording now after having just recorded the podcast.
Oh, dear. I'm so exhausted.
So the basic announcement is this, that we're going to take a couple of weeks off. We're going to take a little break.
Yeah.
Because of various things happening and because I'm very tired, as will become evident in this podcast, and all kinds of stuff. And Joe's going away.
Yeah.
So look, we're going to take a couple of weeks off after this.
Yeah.
And the second thing I have to say is, recording this podcast has left us surprisingly emotional.
It's a great understatement.
Perhaps not surprisingly, actually, given what we talk about. There are tears in this podcast, I have to say that.
It's good warning.
So if you're feeling fragile or something, I'll go and do something else. But yeah, just a little upfront. So we're putting this right at the beginning just to make things clear. Yeah.
Thank you. Well said.
And now on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to episode 332 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there is Joe Davis in a turquoise T-shirt, may I say.
Thank you. So messed up. And also, may I say how much better this is when you've actually put the microphone on. So thank you.
No, I had the microphone on. I just wasn't recording. You know, I've got excuses this week. I've got excuses.
You have. Yeah, all right. I'll give you that. Great. Well, shall we start with matters arising?
Of course.
Okay, well, sorry to those last week who got confused when I said I was at the Oasis reunion. It turns out there's a popular beat combo called Oasis.
Indeed.
who are reuniting. I was at the Oasis Trust reunion where Nick and I used to work together, just to be clear.
A funny story about that. When I worked for Oasis, one of my sort of things that I did was get sort of merchandise made, some, you know, T-shirts and polo shirts and things like that with Oasis on it. And people who wore them kept getting asked where they could get hold of them because they thought they were band merchandise. Even though it was the Oasis logo. It was very funny, really. So we sold quite well. They sold quite well, really, from that point of view. Yeah.
That's good.
Anyway, how are you?
Good, thank you. I was with my grandson at the weekend. That was good. I also got back in time to meet with a listener, John. Hi, John, if you're listening. Busy week, interviewing. But I suppose this needs to be a kind of church notice. I'm about to have some time off. We are going away with some dear friends. One of them is Ruth, who you know and you will remember because she was a guest on the podcast. Controversially explaining why she didn't want people to pray for her when she had cancer. Ruth's cancer cleared up like it does, and now it's back and it's not looking particularly good. But you know, there we go. But we are very much looking forward to a spell in the Forest of Dean. So,
very hippie place, Forest of Dean.
Is it?
It feels a bit weird, really. It's a kind of strange place, the Forest of Dean. I apologise to any listener who lives there, but I've been in various places. I think this is quite odd, really, isn't it? It's quite strange.
Well, what's odd? It's forest. It's beautiful.
I know, but it's just out west, isn't it? And I don't know. It's too close to Glastonbury and all those places, really, you know.
We fear the Wild West.
Indeed, yeah.
But no, I am well and I'm grateful for another little break. So that's great. How are you, my dear boy? Now, I know partly the answer to that, and we're going to save some for towards the end, aren't we? But what's been going on?
Well, I mean, we'll come to it. It's a very sort of strange and sad and weird week, but some lots of joy really in that as well. We had friends up at the weekend. Nice. Paul and Joe listened to the podcast.
Yes.
And nothing better than being with old friends in times of trouble.
Yes,
that was fantastic. It was my birthday weekend, of course, and Claire's birthday treat for me was, in fact, to invite these friends up so that I could do some DIY.
That was
basically her birthday treat.
So touching.
So I could build a bar, in fact.
Oh, really?
In the living room, yeah.
Well, back where the bar used to be.
Sort of, yes, a sort of nod to its previous life as a pub, to build a kind of bar. So it was quite kind of nice, but I mean, it's a classic Claire birthday present, you know. It's a sort of mixture of self-improvement and doing things on a list.
It's like buying someone a vacuum cleaner, isn't it?
Yeah. But it was great fun. It was really good fun, and it was just what we needed, absolutely what we needed at this time. Because it's a strange old time, which we'll come to.
Okay. Well, look, why don't we just crack on with some feedback?
Indeed.
And then wonderful Tim wrote in, and Tim, I need to thank you for reminding me of the word that I was so desperately groping for last week: mantra.
Oh yeah. That was it.
I think I started saying incantation. I don't know what I was saying, you know, like a fool that I am. But thanks, Tim. And then he said some stuff interesting. He says, research shows that adding your name into your mantra has a greater impact. So it should be, Joe, what you are here to do is to be a channel of God's love to all these people. And he says, by the way, please get rid of the word just. You're not just there to be a channel of God's love. You have a beyond words important thing to do. And then he says, this, he's got three steps. He says, if you want to train your brain, the way to do it is simple. Step one, notice your inner critic, or whatever you want to call it. Step two, do something that brings your attention into the present moment. He says that could be breathing deeply a few times, rub your finger and thumb together for 10 seconds and feel the fingerprint ridges, or notice the connection between you and whatever you're sitting on or standing on. So that's step two, get in the present moment. And step three, decide what to do next. Choose from, empathize either out loud or in your mind with yourself or the other person, get curious, ask questions, get creative, get on with it, and time travel. Go forward in time in your brain and look back to see how important whatever it is you're worrying about really is. I quite like that little three steps.
Yeah.
Thank you. He said other things as well. I've edited it down. But Tim, as always, you're a great blessing, and appreciate your input.
Yeah. I like that idea of putting your name into the...
Yes.
The statement, because I think it sort of focuses it nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was talking about neuroplasticity and all sorts of other things earlier in the email, and he's saying, and this is, you know, this is scientifically researched evidence that putting your name in makes it stick. So yeah. Good stuff. Thank you. And then Dan said, you remember we were talking about age, and we've been talking about getting older and being elders and gatekeepers and I don't know what.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he just wrote this beautiful, I want to say poetic, email in. And Dan said, I see aging as a trade. I've traded ignorance for experience, pursuit of wealth for contentment, holding on to grudges and legalism for forgiveness and grace, worry for pursuing peace, trying so hard to be theologically right to realising I don't need to know the answers or even be right, dogmatism for acceptance, pursuit of purity for a little bit of naughtiness, and unfortunately, youthful lunacy leading to injury for creaky old bones and aches and pains because of it. I think the only thing I haven't traded in is humour and my ability to enjoy things from my childhood. He says, most things I have traded for have been worth it completely. Some trades sure are worth it. Thanks for the chance to think on these things. And that's from Dan.
Thank you very much. Lovely, Dan, wasn't it?
That was lovely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's something positive about trading rather than just sort of losing or even sort of moving to different stage. It's something a bit more definite. It's lovely. Yeah,
and more active. Yeah, great. Dan, thank you so much for sending those lovely words in. Really appreciate that. Okay, well, look, let's just cut to the chase, shall we? Let's talk about, if you're able to, what happened last week.
Yeah, you know, I've thought a lot about this because doing a podcast is a bit weird, isn't it? Because people know stuff about you.
Yeah.
But they don't know you.
Yeah.
You know, and so your life is out there. And I've never really wanted that to be such a dominant thing, you know. I mean, writers, we do this everything is sort of grist to our mill, you know, and there's this sense in which you can easily fall into not really living your life, but sort of looking at it as a series of anecdotes that you can sell later, you know. It's ridiculous. So I've debated whether to talk about this, whether to put my whole life out there. But, you know, I think the podcast listeners, it's a community, really. So and they've a lot have been asking about Bill, you know, because I've spoken about him in the past. So basically last week when we were recording, you know, I'd the day before Claire and I had taken the decision that we would have to say goodbye to Bill that week, really. He was nearly 17. He was elderly.
He was your constant companion, wasn't he? He was such a lovely dog. I mean, he was just...
Yeah.
I mean, he is genuinely the nicest dog I knew.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Well, he was struggling, and, you know, it's a very difficult decision, as anyone who's been through it will know. For us, basically, it's our first dog. You know, I'd had dogs when I was a child, but you never were involved in this kind of decision with them. Mm. And as I said, we'd had him in the family for sort of 16 and a half years, really. And so, when I recorded with you last week, I was, you know, we were in the midst of that. That night, the girls came over and we all had sort of family time. And it was very joyful, actually, but also lots of tears. And he, you know, he on Friday, we say goodbye to him, which is pretty tough. So it's been a very strange week because we've built our whole routine around him. You know, past 18 months, he's needed quite a lot of care. And I suppose for people listening to this who don't have a dog, who aren't animal people, you know, that's kind of hard to understand in a way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I appreciate that. But those who have had them know what a huge part of your life they are. It's been a very blessed week, actually, but very sad. I'm very sad at the moment. So I was trying to think how to talk about it. Or even, as I said, whether to talk about it at all. You know, I want to say some things that I think I've learned from having a dog. But I hate the idea of reducing Bill to a sermon.
Yeah, sure.
Does that make sense?
Well, I don't think you need to apologise just for sharing thoughts. I mean, you know, I'm sorry if we've rehearsed this many times over, but when we started this podcast, we thought it was going to be, you know, 10 episodes. We knew what we wanted to talk about. We had a clear idea of content, and it's turned into this come journey with us as we try and make sense of our faith as we do life together. And this is life, isn't it? Well, you know, life and death, in fact.
Yeah, that's helpful, actually, because I suppose the thing about the podcast is if you're just talking about faith in abstract, it doesn't really work, you know, unless we actually share something, at least, of what we're feeling and what is going on in our lives. It doesn't work. I mean, it's easy for you because you share everything, really.
I don't know what you mean.
But anyway, I've been trying to think how to talk about it, and as I said, I didn't want to reduce him to a sermon or a series of sort of moral anecdotes, or because Bill was unique. You know, he was a unique creature. He was a being with likes and dislikes, and he had a personality.
Very much so.
And that's a challenge, because, you know, he had a personality, therefore he must have had some kind of personhood. And so one of the most fundamental things about thinking about living with Bill is that it's forced me to think about, well, why do we assume that human beings are the only creatures with a soul?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because so much of what was going on in his life, it implies some kind of consciousness. I mean, for example, he'd dream. So he'd lie. Most dogs do this, you know, they lie, and when they're asleep, they're twitching, they're chasing rabbits, or they're doing something. Don't know what they're doing. But if you dream, inherently, you have some kind of imaginative life. Have that.
Yeah, exactly. And whilst he hasn't got human consciousness, he's got dog consciousness.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And it's a different form of consciousness. It's a different form of intelligence. You know, I mean, vegetarians might be listening to this and saying, yes, Nick, draw the natural conclusions here.
Yes, you know?
And I understand it. I think you have a real point.
Yeah.
I have to say, there's a lot of clashes between my theology and my cookery, and I think that will continue.
Yes.
But anyway, but I think, as I've thought about it and started writing a bit, I put something up on my blog about him, I think. As I've been thinking about him and grieving, there are things that I think he's taught me. One is that dogs don't pretend.
Yeah.
They don't know how to hide things. I think dogs are probably 7 on the Enneagram. I think they probably are.
A lot of them.
You know, he loved us and he never hid that.
No, totally demonstrated it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when we would come home, it was all over us and that kind of stuff. Not latterly, because he didn't really know who we were, who he was. But I was driving yesterday. I saw two dogs being walked, and their tails were just going at it left, right. They were going like the clappers. They were so happy. They were so unashamedly joyful.
Yeah.
And dogs do not care about being cool. Mm. You know, the cats maybe do that, but dogs are just everything's out there.
Yeah. That's so true.
And so being cool or being reserved could never possibly have entered Bill's head. He could not and never did hide his feelings in that sense.
Yeah.
And I think that teaches you something. If you're like me and you kind of always holding something back,
yeah.
Well, maybe maybe just let yourself go a bit more. Express joy.
Yeah.
What's the matter with that?
Yeah.
So there's that. There's the kind of feeling that you don't need to pretend, you don't need to be reserved about things that are truly joyful. And I mean, talking about joy, I think one of the other things is he took a lot of joy in just simple things, simple repetitive things. Mm. Dogs love routine, they love repetition, but they can do the same thing over and over again and take enormous joy in it.
Well, it's a bit like us. I mean, we've always said if a joke's funny once, it's funny the thousandth time. Not something Claire and Rachel have ever agreed with.
No, and to be honest, part of our joy is in seeing their reactions to it, and probably the listeners can appreciate that as well now. You know, by the time you've heard the whole pith joke so many times. But no, dogs take joy in repetition. To them, it's fresh every time. He knew when it was time for his treats. He loved a routine. He knew when it's time for a walk. Yeah. But I think it's the way that dogs take delight in doing things over and over again. I have to say, you know, some dogs take a delight in chasing a ball. And once you start, they will go for hours.
Yeah.
And babies, I think, are like this, aren't they? Yeah. You know, children, they'll play again and again. Bill was hopeless at chasing sticks. And I don't think he ever caught a ball in his life or would know what to do with it if he did. But he did love going to the park and running in circles. And he loved chips. Oh, man, he loved chips. He would, and he loved going in the car. And he loved walks up until recently. Anyway, and in the town, in the village where we used to live, if you let him lead you, he'd always take you to the same places. Those were joyous.
Yeah.
And I think we lose a lot of this love and joy of simple, repeated pleasures.
Mm.
You know, because the world is always trying to tell us that you've got to get new things, and they're trying to sell us a new experience.
Yeah.
I think you're very good at this, actually, because a lot of time you go to the same places. You take joy in the same places.
I do like my routine.
The same places, the same cheeses.
The same jokes. You
know, the same jokes. You know. And I do as well, actually. Yeah. I do as well, actually. Yeah. But you feel sort of like you shouldn't. You feel like you should always be getting new experiences. You know.
I think I've left that behind now. I don't need so many new experiences.
No. You've traded it.
I've traded in for the ordinary. I mean, here's the Zen master thing I'm going for. Just the joy of waking up in the morning and knowing that I've got another day to do this gig. That's pretty good.
Well, it reminded me, as I was thinking of it, it reminded me of this great quote from Chesterton. Which I've got up on the screen here, which I'd like to read. It's brilliant. He said this. He said, because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit, fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, do it again. And the grown-up person does it again until he's nearly dead. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, do it again to the sun, and every evening, do it again to the moon. Mm. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never got tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we are.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that fantastic?
Father is younger than we are.
Isn't that fantastic? Oh, Chesterton, man. What a genius. But that idea,
you
know, that dogs exult in monotony. They love the same thing, and they're doing it again and again. Do it again. And we think monotony is the eighth deadly sin. You know, we think, oh no, you've got to have variety, which is true. We all need a bit of variety. Nobody wants to be trapped in that. Yeah. But I think to take joy in repetition, it is really good.
There's something to be said for monotony. And may I say again, welcome to episode 332.
You know, to take joy in repetition in things which are good in and of themselves. I'm going to try and do that more. Yeah. Because I think the biggest, most important things in our lives are not really the treats or the special moments. We think they're the everyday good, the monotonously good life.
Yeah, that's great.
Is really important.
Yeah, I like that.
So those things, and here, I might get a bit emotional here, but here, above all, you know, Bill loved us.
Yeah.
And I think he taught me that love is presence. Because he loved us and he loved really just being with us, being with Claire especially. But if she wasn't around, he'd settle for one of the lesser mortals in the house, you know, me or the girls. But he would spend most of his days, certainly latterly, just sitting in his chair in Claire's office, and he was happy. If that was all he wanted, that's all he needed. If she was in the room and he was on a chair near her, he was happy. Separation was his biggest anxiety always. I remember the day we moved, he disappeared. We couldn't find him for a bit. And I found him sitting in the passenger seat of the car. And he'd gone there because he knew we were going somewhere and he was not getting left behind. He was going to stay there. And he stayed there virtually all day in the passenger seat of the car, just stayed there. Wouldn't even when I went on several trips, he was still there. I was thinking a bit about prayer with it, really, because we complicate everything so much, don't we? We complicate things with tasks and techniques and rules and ways of sort of acting and being. And prayer, I think, is ultimately just being conscious of God's presence and wanting to remain with him, being aware. And for Bill, that, you know, to be with us sometimes meant walk, sometimes meant doing things, mostly happy just sitting there. So I guess I'm kind of reaching towards a definition of prayer that is just really
presence,
sitting, sitting curled up in a chair in the same room as God, basically. Yeah.
Well,
that's all I want to do.
I think that's great.
And you know, we fear separation like him as well. You know, we fear that stuff. We fear getting left behind. Well, we think that maybe other people are in God's room and we haven't been allowed in, or we've changed and he doesn't want to be with us anymore or something. Or maybe we don't want to be with him. Maybe we've had enough and we just want to separate ourselves. But I think that nothing can separate us from the love of God, not even our own desire for separation.
Completely agree. And unfortunately, I think sometimes the church and the theology we have hasn't helped us with that, because it's just created shame and guilt to such an extent that you can't receive love. I remember my dog growing up and, you know, the sheer joy of when I got him from school.
Yeah.
You know, and every time, every day, even if you'd only gone out for round the block, you know, the dog was so happy to see you. And that teaches you something about true love. I mean, I remember Richard Rohr writing so beautifully about the gaze of his dog Venus. You could look into the eyes and just see the love. And in fact, he said that dogs were often doing what our parents, you know, bless them, failed to do. They were giving us that unconditional gaze, that look of love.
Yeah.
I mean, dogs are so quick to forgive you as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you've spoken nastily to them or got cross with them or something, they don't hold grudges.
No.
Just back at you with that. And that has to teach you something about the divine love in the universe, doesn't it? That, you know.
Well, just the act of loving, you know, to have somebody in your life who loves you and needs you, I think, is the greatest honour.
Mm.
It's the greatest privilege we can have. It doesn't matter, a pair, a neighbour, you know, a partner, a child. To give and receive love, I think, is the greatest privilege. But it's really painful, isn't it? That's the thing.
Mm.
Because I think it makes us vulnerable, you know.
We
want to protect ourselves. We want to remain aloof. We want to protect ourselves from hurt. And you ever watch The Dog House?
No.
Yeah, but there's a thing on Channel 4, The Dog House, about it's rescue dogs. I mean, we decided, for obvious reasons, best not to watch that this week. But, you know, some dogs are like that, especially rescue dogs. They've been hurt and they are wary, and they're closed down and fearful. But the program shows that what happens when they're loved back into life,
all that changes. Yeah,
all that changes. But it's painful because there's no love without vulnerability.
Exactly.
And to love anything is to make ourselves vulnerable. And I think to give your love to a pet, to a dog, is by its nature to open yourself up to loss. Because and this is the painful thing, they don't live long enough.
No,
you know, if I have a beef with God about it, because, you know, I think, why do you give me things to love that don't last? Why do you do that?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, look, this is rubbish, this episode, because now I'm gone.
But I think here's the thing, maybe everything good does last. Everything beautiful, everything good does last, but in a different form. You know, I know that with the afterlife, we anthropomorphize it and we picture it in familiar forms because we have to, we're human.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's wrong. I don't think it's recognizing the beauty of the earth and creatures and wanting that to continue, that's not wrong.
No.
But I used to say, I don't know what form really next life will take, but the Bible, and here's where my hope is, the Bible clearly talks about a new heaven and a new earth. So I'm going to cling to that one because I want Earth 2 to be bigger and brighter and more beautiful. And I want it to have pubs and I want it to have people and I want it to have dogs.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And I want it to have Bill, if I'm honest. But look, there's hope. That's the joy, isn't it? There's hope.
Well,
excuse me.
No, it's all right. You take a breather. I'll see how I do.
this is the feel-good podcast of the year.
Oh, dear. Anyway, well, look, I heard something this week. Rachel was telling me this. You know, like another way of thinking about the whole coming from God and living here and going back to God, another way of describing that is everything in relationship to this kind of slightly more fragmented experience on Earth, but with real glimpses of relationship to going back to everything in relationship again. I think that's, I'm very happy to think that about heaven or the afterlife or whatever we're going to call it now. But certainly death is not the end, by any stretch of the imagination. And in some ways there is no death. There's just transient change. But going from relationship to this experience back into whole relationship with everything again, I think is a nice way of thinking about things.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm done.
You've done well. Thank you. And of course, we're always aware of, you know, anyone listening of the various different seasons of your life. Some of you may have lost a pet recently. Some of you may have lost a loved one recently. And I think all this talk of love is really important. Love and loss. I'd like to finish with a quote, if that's all right. But before that, we want to thank the listeners. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Sorry if this is a little bit
dragged you down.
Yeah, that was unexpected. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and for all those who've been in touch and sort of asked about him and all that kind of stuff, and friends. That's really really lovely. Thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. That's fantastic. Thank you to those who recommend it to others and leave nice reviews. That's really nice as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, why didn't you end with this quote?
Okay, so that'd be great. Yeah, this comes from an unexpected source because this is from the actor Jim Carrey, you know, Ace Ventura, okay. Bruce Almighty, all that lot, many others. Jim Carrey, he said this. So forgive me, it's a little bit longer, but I think it's so good it's worth sticking with. He says, grief is not just an emotion. It's an unravelling, a space where something once lived but is now gone. It carves through you, leaving a hollow ache where love once resided. In the beginning, it feels unbearable, like a wound that will never close. But over time, the raw edges begin to mend. The pain softens, but the imprint remains, a quiet reminder of what once was. The truth is, you never truly move on. You move with it. The love you had does not disappear. It transforms. It lingers in the echoes of laughter, in the warmth of old memories, in the silent moments where you still reach for what is no longer there. And that's okay. Grief is not a burden to be hidden. It's not a weakness to be ashamed of. It is the deepest proof that love existed, that something beautiful once touched your life. So let yourself feel it. Let yourself mourn. Let yourself remember. There is no timeline, no right way to grieve. Some days will be heavy and some will feel lighter. Some moments will bring unexpected waves of sadness, while others will fill you with gratitude for the love you were lucky enough to experience. Honour your grief, for it is sacred. It is a testament to the depth of your heart. And in time, through the pain, you will find healing, not because you've forgotten, but because you have learned how to carry both love and loss together.